This is Jessica Adams with a podcast on the asteroids and the way that they work in your natal chart. Now, before 2006, I didn't take asteroids seriously at all in the horoscope. But after 2006, when astronomers decided that Pluto should be demoted to dwarf planet and Ceres, his mother-in-law, be promoted from asteroid to dwarf planet, I realised that there was something more going on than just astronomy. In fact, Ceres, ever since she was discovered and named in 1801, has been a symbol of transformation, demotion and promotion, and a change in the balance of power. Everything in astrology is about synchronicity. It's about strangely fated and heavily meaningful coincidence. Carl Jung introduced the term synchronicity to us, and it is, in fact, the oil that makes the wheels go round in what we do. So any astrologer seeing Ceres triumph in 2006 over Pluto could not help but have been reminded of the original Roman myth where Jupiter intervened to restore order to the known world by making sure that Pluto and Ceres were equals. So for our astrology from the year 2006, it was a really strong message that we needed to look at the balance of power in the horoscope one more time. I began testing this in various magazines that I was writing for, and the reader response was fantastic. Most of my readers at magazines like Vogue and Elle were women, and they responded strongly to Ceres, this new arrival, who is herself a strong female archetype. But more than that, the predictions were coming true and the divination was working. So I set about adding Proserpina, who was the daughter of Ceres and Pluto's wife, as my very first pure asteroid study. Now, in your horoscope, Pluto is a symbol of battles for control and power. By sign and house, Pluto shows you where you try to take control or take control back repeatedly. And Ceres, by sign and house, our new dwarf planet, shows you very clearly where you are born entitled and quite powerful yourself, creative and productive, but where you will repeatedly get into questions about who or what runs the show, who or what has possession, who or what is in control, who or what is top dog. Now, you don't really understand Pluto or Ceres as an astrologer until you know the whole story, which is given to us by Lempriere and other historians and writers. And Proserpina is just as important as Pluto and Ceres. So none of this stuff about asteroids being lumps of rock or smaller than or less than the planets that we use in our divination. They are all just symbols. They are tied to each other and connected to each other and help our astrology by informing us about their relationships with each other. So although Proserpina is an asteroid and Pluto is a former planet and now a dwarf planet, there really should be no distinction in how seriously you take them in your natal chart. Proserpina, the maiden, the innocent one, the virgin, the girl, was empowered by her marriage to Pluto. She was also made powerful by knowing how much she mattered to her mother Ceres, who stopped the world for the loss of her. Ceres went on strike. The goddess of wheat and corn, the four seasons of the year, refused to play ball when Pluto took her daughter. She appealed to Pluto's brother Jupiter, greatest and best of all the gods, to come up with a solution. And the solution was that as Proserpina had eaten one half of a pomegranate in Hades with Pluto, her husband, she now must spend half the year with him and half the year with her mother. So when Proserpina is with Ceres, it is spring and summer. Ceres is happy. The wheat and corn can be harvested. When she is with Pluto, underground, in Hades, in the darkness, invisible to all of us, She has effectively gone missing and Ceres is in mourning. So we have the rain as her tears in autumn and winter and the freezing cold when she feels most alone. This is the rather delightful Roman way of interpreting the four seasons. The Four Seasons itself was released in 1801 when Ceres was discovered and named, which is typical of astrology. But my point is, Proserpina is the key to everything. She is a symbol in your horoscope of that part of you which negotiates and plays the go-between or is a bridge between two powerful people or two powerful organisations or places. This is where you run from one to the other and try to keep both sides happy. Proserpina is tremendously important in the horoscopes of diplomats and agents for obvious reasons. She can also turn up in family situations where there has been a divorce and a child must go between mother and father. As you might imagine, Proserpina also turns up in situations where there are strained in-law relationships, and a mother-in-law resents her son-in-law and has a complicated relationship with her daughter. And that's literally just one asteroid. There are so many more of them. One of the things I like about using asteroids is that they restore the male-female balance in the horoscope. So when you complete the family tree of astrology that began with Jupiter and Saturn and the rest, when you begin to add their children and their wives and their in-laws, you begin to get female power restoration. And in fact, women in ancient Rome were tremendously powerful. We're working with asteroids like Minerva. She is the Roman update of Pallas Athene. And that brings me to an important point about the asteroids. I sometimes see people using Greek asteroids or Greek-named archetypes in what is effectively a Roman horoscope. The astrology that we use today is Latin. It was brought to Britain by the Romans. Britain exported that astrology to the United States of America, Australia, and all around the world. From this basis, the Italian, Roman, Latin view of the gods and goddesses comes the horoscopes that we work with today. Now, as I say this to you, I can see a recycling truck pulling up outside my beach house in Australia, and that's typical of astrology. Astrology is synchronicity, and what I'm meant to be doing is talking to you about recycling. This is exactly what the Romans did with Minerva. They took the Greek Pallas Athene and they recycled her. They shipped her to Britain. In fact, they created a temple based around Minerva in Bath. You can go there today and see the head of Minerva, which is another wonderful piece of synchronicity, because Minerva was born from her father Jupiter's brain. She is the goddess of deep wisdom and intelligence and big, profound answers, and she is the recycled Pallas Athene. In fact, most of the things that we work with today in astrology are thoroughly recycled from Greece. Whenever you're talking about Mercury, the messenger of the gods to the Romans, you're talking about the Greek Hermes. Whenever you talk about Venus, the Roman goddess of complicated relationships, you're effectively talking about a recycled, renamed, adapted version of Aphrodite. But don't make the common mistake that I see so often, and particularly on the internet, where Greeks and Romans are being mixed up. It's effectively like mixing up a pack of playing cards with tarot cards. You are going to get a jumbled and incoherent result. You would never work with an asteroid named Zeus as well as the planet Jupiter in a horoscope, but in fact they're both real in astronomy, which informs our astrology. So to keep life simple, stick to the Romans and keep the Italian family intact. Now, astrology changes with the times. It reflects the real world. And as our recycling truck pulls off in the distance, I am now in a position to talk to you about real world astrology as a constant recycling device. Effectively, there are two kinds of astrology today in the West. One of them is traditional, and it's stopped with Saturn. In 1781, when William Herschel found Uranus in Bath, in New King Street, astrologers had a choice. They could either recycle the horoscope and begin to add Uranus into their work, or leave him well alone and stick with a universe that ended at Saturn. Today, there is a branch of astrology called traditional astrology, horary astrology, based on the work of 17th century predictors like William Lilly, and it does not incorporate changing or moving times. It does very well for itself, and traditional astrologers are a hugely respected part of the profession. But it is very much a kind of astrology and not the astrology that most people know, which is this constantly updated, moving and vibrant reflection of what's going on here on planet Earth. So it really did begin in 1781 with Uranus. He was a symbol of independence, revolution and freedom. He turned the known world for astronomers upside down. New telescopes, powerful telescopes that could detect Uranus, were soon able to pick up objects like Ceres. Now, Ceres was a planet for about 50 years after her discovery in 1801. She was then relegated to asteroid and then, of course, promoted, as we found out, in 2006. So this is a nice illustration of the way that modern astrology works. It's about constantly rethinking and reassessing and reviewing the horoscope as a mirror of reality, because it is in the way of these things that when something is discovered and named by astronomers and it just happens to be part of the original family tree that began with Mercury and Jupiter and the rest, we find as astrologers that the meaning of that archetype or that symbol, the myth attached to that god or goddess, has a striking meaning in the year of discovery too. And that's really how it all works. Ceres in 1801 was this strong message about power and control and the necessity of compromise, and particularly perhaps the power of women. And she comes along as a discovery on the 1st of January 1801, on the same day that the Act of Union arrives, creating the United Kingdom that became Queen Victoria's domain. The Union Jack is a neat little symbol of Ceres, as it combines the flags of England, Scotland, Ireland and Wales as one, and is a strong permanent reminder not only of compromise over power, but also empowered women, in this case the monarch. It's also a neat little reminder that as above, so below, within and without. Astrology changes to match changing times, and the discovery or the reclassification of any sort of heavenly body, be it asteroid or dwarf planet, is a way of saying to us, this is the world now, and this is the mirror reflection of it. When I was asked to predict Brexit, the polls were saying that the majority of people in Great Britain would vote to remain inside the European Union. The horoscope said nothing of the sort would happen because Ceres was lined up with Mars, an angry symbol, and Uranus, the symbol of freedom, independence, and revolution, on voting day. And that's how astrology works in the modern world. History repeats. We noticed the clock and the calendar are no good at measuring circular time. They only show us linear time. But by tracking things like the asteroids and the dwarf planets, we can, in fact, make a decent prediction. So how do you get your head around all these asteroids? Well, one way to do it is to go in groups. So begin with the Venus group. Venus was first recorded in 1581 BC. Mars, first recorded in ancient Egypt. Vulcan, or asteroid 4464 in some horoscopes, was first seen in 1966. Cupid or Cupido, first seen in 1913. Psyche, first sighted in 1852. The family goes something like this, and knowing the asteroids will inform your knowledge of Venus and Mars. Venus was married to Vulcan. He was a lame blacksmith, a working class man of few words. Passionate, powerful, with tremendous self-control and willpower. He needed to have it because Venus, with all her vanity and her insecurity and her wandering eye, her desires and passions, fell very hard for Mars, her lover, the Roman god of war. Vulcan found Venus and Mars in bed together. He was a blacksmith and created a wire mesh to trap them in for all the gods to laugh at. He didn't strike at Mars nor at Venus. He could have done, but he chose to remain self-controlled. And in your horoscope, Vulcan or Vulcano is a symbol of your own ability to manage yourself and other people and a situation. He is literally the symbol of the working class man in any chart. And it is interesting that he was found in 1966 when a team of many working class men, hard-working footballers, won the World Cup for England. Cupid or Cupido is a symbol of desire, passion, lust, of a short-term nature. He is the son of Venus and he did her dirty work for her. Cupid was depicted as a cherub or as a prepubescent boy in Roman sculpture and art. Harmless, with wings, but really not with much power. This was a way of showing visually that Cupid was fleeting desire, not to be taken too seriously. The wings of love, here today, gone tomorrow. And for the Romans, an infatuation, a dangerous thing in their politics, could last and should last for just a few weeks or months. Any longer and it could wreck a marriage and destroy a maiden and her lover. So for the Romans, Cupid was a way of saying, this is just a harmless fling. It's a crush. It's lust. It's one of Venus's games, using Venus's boy child. In your own horoscope, by sign and house, Cupido, asteroid 763, will show you where you are prone to fleeting desire, but also capable of whipping it up. Cupid, of course, with his bow and arrow, could pierce you and bring about that desire, which only lasts for a mere season, but is still, while it is there, all about obsession and passion. So the arrow wound or the arrow mark that heals is a good way of thinking about this asteroid. But it's not always about romantic or sexual love at all, of course. It may be if Cupid turns up in the fifth house or the seventh house of your natal chart or by transit there. But most of the time, it's just about longing. You're passionate about houses and doing them up and selling them on. You might have Cupid in Cancer in the fourth. If you're passionate about the internet and passionate about using Twitter, you might have Cupid in Gemini in the third. Perhaps you also write passionate love letters and so on. Now, the Venus group has its own particular vibe and its own particular aura. Venus, Mars, Vulcan, Cupid and Psyche, the lover of Cupid and eventually his partner, are here to tell us about the complications of relationships and the difficulties of passionate feeling. Psyche was first recorded in 1852. She was the object of all the jealousy that Venus is well known for. Now, I sometimes see the strangest interpretations of Venus on the internet. I see her associated with interior design and poetry and music, whereas in actual fact, she is nothing of the sort. For the Romans, Venus was a sex goddess. She is always shown naked, touching her breast to draw attention to it, or touching her vagina once again to draw attention to it. She is shown crouching with the famous Venus bottom in the air. She is effectively the first porn star, and she comes to us from Roman mythology. Psyche was not, for Venus, a particularly easy person to look at. She was not immortal or goddess-like. She was a mere human, but she had all the beauty that Venus was known for. And this is where this idea of Venus and the green-eyed monster comes about. Venus decided that Psyche needed to be brought down a peg or two, so she found the ugliest and most deformed creature she could and sent him to the sleeping Psyche with instructions for her son Cupid. Cupid, approaching the beautiful and good Psyche, was told to wake her up with his arrow and present the sleeping Psyche with this horrific creature. The idea being, of course, that Psyche would open her eyes and fall madly in love. The Roman sense of humour, as you'll gather, wasn't particularly advanced. Cupid tripped and fell. The hot wax from the candle that he was holding fell on his arm, and instead of impaling Psyche on the arrow of desire, he impaled himself and became mad about Psyche, truly madly deeply in love, or in lust. A furious Venus subjected Psyche to tests and trials. Some were mental torture and some were just impossible tasks, sorting out the contents of the barn overnight. But Psyche was helped. Nature, the universe, the cosmos itself came out to assist her, whether it was an insect or whether it was a sign. In the end, Jupiter decided, as always, to make everything better. Cupid and Psyche were married. Psyche was made immortal, and the sculpture of these two entwined lovers can still be seen today in the Louvre. So understanding the family of Venus, including these asteroids, Vulcan, Cupid and Psyche, is a way of really getting to know Venus. But it's also a way of understanding your chart, and by sign and house, where the most complicated relationships might come about. It's also true to say that these asteroids can add to a transit or add to a natal placement. So if you have something fairly obvious, like the moon in the seventh house of marriage, but you also have Cupid there, there may be a strong message here about infatuation within the marriage. In other words, temptation. As we move around your horoscope, we come to the Jupiter group. Now, this is suitably large. Jupiter, after all, is Optimus Maximus to the Romans, the biggest and the best. And here we have a clear picture of a love god. Jupiter's wife Juno, the asteroid, was discovered as part of a whole as the telescopes were becoming ever more powerful and the astronomers, keenly competitive, were all trying to add to the pantheon, if not the galaxy. Ever since Johann Bode decided that Uranus was the correct name for the new planet discovered by William Herschel in 1781, astronomers have followed Bode's convention on naming new discoveries. So it is to the Romans that astronomers have turned for inspiration. Thus Juno, Jupiter's wife, and their children. Fortuna, Jupiter's firstborn daughter, found in 1852. Diana, Jupiter's independent feminist daughter, who begged him to release her from marriage and motherhood, found and named in 1804. Minerva, which we've already spoken about, his brilliant, wise daughter, born fully formed from Jupiter's brain, found in 1867. Bacchus, his son, self-indulgent, the head of all bacchanalia in Rome, feasting and merriment, a symbol of pure pleasure for pleasure's sake, found in 1977. Apollo, found in 1932, just as various world leaders were rising to power ahead of the Second World War. He is, in fact, a symbol of leadership, and he is Jupiter's golden boy. Apollo himself has others in his family tree, and so we turn to Chiron, the teacher, the most unconventional teacher of them all, also found in 1977. Aesculapia, 1923, the Roman healer. Panacea, his daughter, a symbol of ethical questions about remedies, cures and solutions, comes along in 1980. Hygieia, her sister, Aesculapia's other daughter, as you might expect, a symbol of hygiene and prevention being better than cure, comes along in 1849. The Jupiter group in your horoscope is very useful because, in divination terms, it describes benefics, symbols which are of benefit to you. Jupiter, of course, was the greater benefic. All these ideas about healing and helping and things turning out for the best and repair work and happy endings are very close to the Jupiter family of asteroids. Juno, for example, is a symbol of commitment in your horoscope, just like Juno married Jupiter. She is a symbol of the commitment that brings you abundance and benefits, Jupiter being the greater benefic. There are questions here about the price of commitment as well, but that's for another day. Fortuna, Jupiter's firstborn daughter, is an ancient symbol that turns up everywhere from Shakespeare to sculpture. Now, Fortuna, found in 1852, shows you where the wheel of fortune spins, so that even when you're down, you're going up, and when you're at the very top, you have to keep your sense of humour because you could be on the way down. Humour being associated with Jupiter, Fortuna's father. Diana is a symbol of tremendous freedom and independence. She is associated with feminism. Minerva, as we've seen, a symbol of wisdom. Bacchus, it's party time. Apollo, you can take the lead. All the healers in the family, whether they were teachers or part of the family, Chiron, Aesculapia, Panacea, Hygieia, for the Romans were about the answer, the way through, the way forward, even when things were critical. So the Jupiter family is just what you would expect with the asteroids. It's Jupiterian in nature. And just as you're probably thinking about Jupiter, you may be thinking about Saturn. Saturn is, of course, the son and the father relationship that we know of old. It still recurs today. The difficult father, Saturn, and the boy who escapes, Jupiter. Father-son redemption is a Saturn-Jupiter theme. And just as Jupiter has his own family with asteroids, Saturn does too. Saturn was first recorded in Babylon. We then go rocketing forward to the 1800s with these powerful telescopes to find the rest of the family. His wife was not discovered until 1979, but Vesta, his daughter, was there in 1807. We also need to look at the fact that Ops, even though she did not arrive until 1979, is an archetype of a powerful and clever female who tries to fix problems. Saturn was a baby eater. He consumed all his children in paranoid self-sabotage in order to escape a curse. And the curse, as you probably know, was that all of his children would overthrow him, as he had in fact overthrown his own father, Uranus. Ops came along in 1979 as the political tide was turning in Great Britain with the election of the first female prime minister in history, Margaret Thatcher. She was there, she said, to fix problems. Ops was, in mythology, 2,000 years before, the wife of serious self-sabotaging Saturn and the means of his redemption. She made sure that Jupiter escaped, and when Jupiter was old enough, he returned to take over from Saturn just as the curse had foretold, but also to release him. The scythe with which he had castrated his father Uranus, the source of the curse, became transformed into an instrument of agriculture. There is a great deal to Ops, even as an asteroid, she is not to be overlooked. Vesta too inherits all her father's issues about paranoia and fear, but she plays them through the arena of male-female politics. The Vestal Virgins, being a temple in Rome made up of important daughters of important families, who were sworn to celibacy as virgins until the age of 40. The only male in their presence was the Pontifex Maximus, who ruled over them. And so this idea of male-female power and politics is very strong with this asteroid. Within the Temple of the Vestales, if you were to lose your virginity, you would be buried alive, and the man responsible would meet a grisly end. Thus, this atmosphere of mild paranoia and fear that comes where Vesta goes, and as I've said, she has inherited that from her father Saturn. This kind of information was not possible before the arrival of asteroids themselves, so Vesta in 1807, but more particularly modern software. So when we turn on our solar-fire software to look at a chart, these asteroids are laid out before us. In fact, Stephanie Johnson and Zane Stein, my friends and colleagues, have been working on just this kind of program to show you how the family fits together. Just knowing that something like Vesta exists in your divination can be so useful, particularly if you're looking at situations where there are two or more women or girls and one male and a tremendous amount of politics. Some families are like this. Vesta families tend to consist of men with a previous wife and daughters behind them, marrying again and perhaps producing another daughter. So all in all, from the outside, it looks a bit like a family harem. Neptune only has one person in his family group, and she's not an asteroid, she's a trans-Neptunian. Salacia, 120347 in astronomy tables, was first seen on September 22, 2004. Now, Salacia is very much like Neptune, and when you look at paintings of her, she's seen draped in seaweed and covered in shells. She arrived on a dolphin. Like Neptune, she is about the beach and the sea, two different realities, quite separate from what we would call normal life. In your horoscope by sign and house, Salacia shows where your feet never touch the ground, where you escape into other possibilities and other realities, and yet it works. As long as you remember the rules. As with Neptune, there have to be boundaries, limits, and all sorts of barriers and controls. Salacia was found in 2004, the year of the Asian tsunami. The Pluto family we have discussed, for all that he was only found in 1930, we have to remember that Ceres was found in 1801, and her daughter Proserpina in 1853. So talking about chronological order with the new astrology or even the size of a rock is pretty relevant. This is divination. Knowing the family and working with them can, as I've said, give you a tremendous insight into Pluto in your chart. But even though he was certainly in the 20th century the first cab off the rank, don't forget the rest of the taxi rank, because Ceres and Proserpina can take you on an incredible journey once you learn to work with them. The male-female energy balance of life was restored by completing the Roman family tree of gods and goddesses within our astrology. In fact, we end up with 14 gods and 14 goddesses to explore, a 50-50 gender balance. So we have the Sun and Mercury and Mars on the male side, Vulcan, Cupid, Jupiter, Apollo, Bacchus, Chiron, Aesculapia, Saturn, Uranus, Neptune and Pluto. And on the female side, we have the Moon, Venus, Psyche, Juno, Diana, Minerva, Fortuna, Panacea, Hygieia, Ops, Vesta, Salacia, Proserpina and Ceres. It's an incredible dance and it has thoroughly updated us for the 21st century. I hope you enjoy discovering and exploring the asteroids in your horoscope.